The 2019 Arizona legislative session includes a member roster in the House that is the closest it's been in decades. There are 31 Republicans and 29 Democrats, making for some interesting political speculation about which issues will lead to common ground. One of those Democrats is freshman lawmaker Aaron Lieberman from Legislative District 28 in Phoenix. LD 28 is one of only a few districts in the state to have split-party representation. Usually that's meant two Republicans and one Democrat. But Lieberman's victory over incumbent Maria Sims and Republican challenger Kathy Petsis turned that to two Democrats and one Republican. In a few minutes, I'll speak with a political analyst who lives in LD 28, but I start with Representative Lieberman. Aaron, why did you want to run, and why in what is considered to be a swing district, LD 28?
Yeah, well, LD 28, I love. I think it's a fascinating area. It's a microcosm of the state. You know, there's 10,000 more Republicans than Democrats from a registration perspective. Mm-hmm. It's about 50,000 Republicans, 42,000 independents, and then 40,000 Democrats. It's where I grew up, where I was born and raised. And so, you know, and kind of moving back here, nostalgia is a powerful thing. But kind of growing up, I had the sense of the whole state kind of working together to, you know, move things forward. It's a state that made a lot of progress. I told the story probably 1,000 times during the campaign that someone in LD 28 had told me that Burton Barr, who was would now be the state representative from LD 28 in terms of where his house was, when he was the majority leader in the House of Representatives, every Sunday, the Democratic governor, Bruce Babbitt, would come over to his house. Mr. Babbitt would hand him the newspaper from the curb. They'd walk inside, have a cup of coffee, and talk about how they were going to move the state forward together, not as Democrats or Republicans, but as Arizonans. Mm-hmm. And in some, you know, strange, distant way, I, you know, didn't really realize it, but that was just kind of the spirit of the place, was this kind of can-do optimism. It really truly made me who I am. I mean, that was kind of the spirit I took into my adult life of looking around saying, hey, what can you do to move things forward? And coming back, I was really struck by how we had lost that spirit in the state and I think specifically in LD 28. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, essentially I was just trying to bring back that notion of let's roll up our sleeves, work together and get things done.
There does seem like there's a spirit to some extent, at least as it relates to, let's say, K-12 funding for one, that a lot of people in that district can come together on. There's almost a pragmatism to that. What are the priorities for our kids? What are the priorities for the generations going forward? Did you get a feel for that? Even I'm sure there were some Republicans who were like, Aaron, get off my stoop. Yeah. But for the most part, did you feel like there was more of an open-mindedness to at least what you had to offer?
Yeah, absolutely. Among Republicans and Democrats. I mean, I think there is, I always say, and it's really true, we quite literally have a lot of country club Republicans in LD 28. And these are folks who want the state to work right. They, you know, they don't want their, you know, tons of taxes, which I think everybody understands, but they understand we need to have good public schools. And if we're going to be a great state, we got to have great schools. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a growing awareness of we really lost our way in that. And I think education, by and large, was common ground. I will tell you, especially among independents, this desire to have politicians stop fighting each other and start fighting for us was very, very big. And I quickly saw how that resonated with people among our independents and our Democrats and Republicans. You know, we need to get back to where Arizonans first and really working on things that'll move the whole state forward and not all of this, you know, partisan bickering.
Even if you yourself were optimistic, were you surprised a little bit that the reception to these ideas or this approach was perhaps as positive as it was, mm-hmm. considering what we hear about it? And it's real that there's a great divide. Certainly nationally there is. Were you pleasantly surprised to find that people were more receptive to this message?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, one of the I'd never run for political office before. I wasn't sure how all of this works. And one of the things that is that I did a lot of was knocking doors. And I actually found it to be, you know, in this cluttered world of you all get your own information and your own, you know, filtered stuff, standing at someone's front door and talking to them was a really powerful way to get information about where people stood. And so I didn't exactly know what to think, mm-hmm. but I quickly saw in those conversations that the average person just wants the state to work right. And, you know, you're not knocking the doors of just the most politically engaged people who are always on Facebook. You're knocking everybody's door. And so you really get a sense of where people are in their core, not the noise that you often hear on both sides, but where people are just generally. And it was really engaging and inspiring for me to just mm-hmm. hear what people wanted. And honestly, it kind of resonated with who I am, too, of like I'm an entrepreneur who wants things to move forward and the state to you know, start moving in a direction that really emphasizes our public schools in particular. You know, I've made a commitment during the campaign to meet with Republican member of the House of Representatives to sit and talk. And I've asked each one of them. I've done many of those meetings already. I've asked them for advice on what it takes to be a good lawmaker.
So are people in your party and Republican Party as well receptive to that? Do they? And I ask this with a note of cynicism, in the sense that, or are people thinking, I mean, can they look at you and say, Aaron's in this for the right reasons, I want to work with him, or is there still that sort of partisan thing of, well, is he trying to get something from me?
Yeah, yeah. It's a good question. Overwhelmingly, the response has been very positive. I had one, you know, very conservative Republican member say to me, we're all here to make each other successful. You know, we may have different views. So I have been surprised and impressed. I almost didn't know what to think, but in how collegial people are when you actually get them, you know, one-on-one and you're sitting there talking to them. And that's just another, you know, one of the reasons I made that commitment of trying to meet with everybody, and one of the things I've just seen in my own life. It's hard to vilify people when you know what sports their kids are into and you know what they care about. Yeah. And all of us, you know, there's not a person down there who's doing it for the money. That's for dang sure. Everyone is doing this because they have some vision or idea of trying to improve their state and our state. And I feel like that's enough common ground. We may have and often do have very different views about how to do that, but enough kind of core respect to say, hey, where are the areas that there's overlap that we can work together on?
Aaron Lieberman, new representative for LD28 here in Arizona. Aaron, thank you.
Thank you.
One of LD28's residents is longtime political consultant Chuck Coughlin of High Ground. I started by asking him why Democrats ended up winning both House seats in the district and whether it had more to do with it turning purple or if infighting on the GOP side helped.
I think first and foremost, the outlier in the district was Maria Sims' campaign. Mm. It was a campaign that was run to the hard right of the party, ultimately lost the endorsement of the governor and the chamber. So as we often say in politics, most political wounds are self-inflicted. Yeah. I think she self-inflicted that wound upon herself. Had she run as an incumbent and maintained her conservative credentials but not picked the fight with McGee, you know, that was it was a close election, but I would have thought it would have been a much, much tighter race.
Aaron Lieberman, I spoke with him earlier, newcomer to politics. And it was interesting to me that the Democrats actually thought they would have a chance. Now, Kelly Butler had done really well, obviously, but that was that whole single shot strategy. Right. The Democrats decided this time they weren't doing that. They were initially going into the race, were you thinking this is going to be Sims? Were you thinking maybe Petsas on the Republican side? How much of a chance did you give Lieberman?
I was asked to make a prediction on that, I think maybe with you. And I said I thought all three of them would come back. So yeah. I was right 2 out of 3. but the upset of the race was seeing that Sims got knocked out by Mr. Lieberman. The education issues played a prevalent part in the race, and the district being an affluent center of the road district. I mean, look at the Senate race. The Senate race was incredibly tight. Kate was sweating down to the very last day holding on to that race, and she poured everything she had into it. So it clearly was more than just the self-inflicted wounds that Sims put on her. Mm-hmm. There was a district-wide push on the education issues and frustration with the legislative inaction on addressing what I think was the core issue of the election cycle is funding education.
And Brophy McGee is one of the few that could still be characterized as a moderate who occasionally on certain major issues, whether it's child safety, whether it's K-12 funding, she has been willing to work across the aisle. How much of a difference does that make?
It's a huge difference. I mean, I live in the district. I voted for her. I admire her. She's a go-to person when you have a problem at the legislature that's going to require a bipartisan compromise. She is somebody that is capable of navigating those streams and is respected by Senate leadership as somebody who is not overtly partisan and is thoughtful. And so she's a very articulate, thoughtful legislator. I would say probably one of a handful down there who are go-to people on very tough issues.
So LD28 has been an outlier for a long time, really, we could say. One of only 3 or 4 districts in the state that had that split representation with parties. So based on what you saw, and we know these election cycles change, we know that you have to have the right candidate, you have to have the right issue. Does this indicate to you, though, that LD28 is really going to be up for grabs for the next couple of cycles?
Well, I'd even go broader than that. Okay. I'd go broader that the definition of both parties are up for grabs.
Okay.
You notice nationally, none of the progressives won. None of the hard progressives won. None of the hard progressives that ran here in Arizona, Mr. Garcia's campaign, didn't go well. So it's the candidates, the Kyrsten Sinemas that narrated the campaign that I'm an Arizonan first. I don't like Republicans. I really don't even like Democrats, she said, you know. So it's putting some clothing on that vernacular, that narration is what I think 19 and 20 is going to be about. And I think there will be opportunities for thoughtful candidates to be able to follow that path and add to that narrative. It is a bit of threading the needle, but I think it's there, and I think we'll see more and more of that as the cycle matures.
Coming back to LD28 and its impact on the state, are Aaron Lieberman and Kelly Butler going to have to prove that they have an independent streak? Because we're going to say it's 31-29 now, when it was 36-24, 35-25, it's easier for the party and the minority to play games a little bit. Now, mm-hmm. when it's this close, you really can't do that, can you?
Well, you can.
You can play strategic games, but you can't be...
The important thing is, where can you make a difference? And I've talked to Kelly about that. What can you take to the speaker knowing, for instance, you know, we have DCP on the table, the Direct Drought Contingency Plan. Right. Very difficult choices that need to be made for the state. Sacrifices that are going to have to be made. Some of our Republican brethren on that are willing to tear at the threads of that very fine deal. So at what point do you say, well, we can do that and not exploit it? So you begin to set the stage at the beginning of the legislative session for then this discussion about the resources that are available in this budget cycle. You pick the right fights or pick the wrong fights? And how do you pick the right fights to make a difference?
Chuck Coughlin, President and CEO of High Ground. Always good to see you. Thanks.
Great being here. Thanks for having me.